I ran up to Sid Caesar, who was funnier than I was, and I said, ah, this man is a genius. So I wrote for Sid Caesar, and I made $50 a week, and that led to some good money eventually. And I spent 10 years writing for Sid Caesar professionally, and that man was and still is a genius, on screen as well as off. I mean, on camera as well as off. We were in Chicago. We were driving. Sid Caesar is the strongest man that ever lived. There's nobody stronger than Sid Caesar. A Chicago cab driver cut us off and said things I cannot say on the radio. Sid Caesar then cut him off, walked over to the Chicago cab driver. They wear little leather bow ties and yellow hats, yellow caps. Sid Caesar said to the man, do you remember being born? Do you remember the trauma of birth? The man said, what are you talking about? He said, well, we're going to reenact it right here on Michigan Avenue, and pulled the man through the little clipper window, started to pull his head through with from the leather bow tie. I had to bite his hand to let he'd let the man go. Birth was being reenacted there in Michigan. It was terrible.
You also worked with Howard Morris in those days.
Howie Morris, I love that man. Just recently, I robbed him again. When I met Howie, he didn't know who I was. We were walking down McDougal Street, and somebody said, this is Mel Brooks, and we were all alone. And it's a great, the village. So I slapped him in the face. He gave me his money. I robbed him, took all his money. 6 years after he knew me, we went for a row in Central Park. We were rowing around. I said, this looks like a good place for a robber. I'm very sorry, Howie. I'm compulsive. I took an oar and smashed him in the head. He gave me everything he had and got out of the boat and walked in the water. It was humiliating. I felt very bad about it, but I couldn't help it. I am compulsive. And recently I robbed him again. But Howie doesn't know that he's the funniest man that ever lived. He doesn't know this. He told me the story of his father's death. Now, death is very serious. Death, I think, of tuberculosis is about the two most serious things, in the world. And a green Dodge. Green Dodge, I'm afraid of a green Dodge. I'll talk about that later off the air. I don't want to go into it. Anyway, Howie was telling me a story that was truly funny. Can I have a minute of your time?
All the time you
okay,
like.
Okay, give me $11. Here. Howie's father dies. Howie's father leaves a will. In the will, it says, please scatter my ashes over the Hudson River. Howie goes to the crematorium. He says, I'd like my father. They say, here, $120. He says, wait a minute, I paid for everything. They said, no, you didn't pay for everything. There's an alabaster urn that the ashes come in, and that's $120. He says, I want to sprinkle them in the river. I don't want the urn. I do not want the urn. Sir, we don't give people back in a Breakstone cheese box. I mean, this is an urn. You got to. So they said, if you have a container of your own, we'll be glad to transfer the last remaining ashes. So Howie ran across the street to a little bodega, a little Spanish grocery store, got a can of Medaglia d'Oro coffee, opened the can, threw out the coffee, put his father in the coffee can, took the coffee can on the Hudson Henry Parkway road, tried to get by the river. Now, there's nowhere you can get to the Hudson River. There's no way. There's just a highway and then the river. So you either have to fall in or you have to climb down the sides of the Henry Hudson Parkway, the West Side Highway. So they climbed down the West Side Highway, Howie and his mother. It's November 15th. It's cold. It's blustery. Howie takes the ashes and says, God bless you, Dad, and good luck, and good, just be happy forever, and throws the ashes up into the air, and they blow back into his blue coat. His father blew back into his blue coat. So he's pushing his father out of his coat, smacking his coat, saying, I love you, Dad, and good luck and eternal rest tonight. And God bless, So I said to Howie, so where is your father's last resting place? He said, Rand Cleaners on 79th and Amsterdam Avenue. That's his last, it was so terrible. So what I'm saying to you is that Howie was aware, that there's no point to this except to say that life things are funnier than made-up things. That was true.
The Sid Caesar Show was also where you and Carl Reiner first got together?
Yes, I wrote for the show, and I wrote a lot of stuff for Carl and for Howie and for Imogene and, of course, for Sid Caesar. The first thing I did was the German professor. Sleep. You can't fall asleep. If you put the body to sleep altogether, sleep is very important, but you can't just put the entire body to sleep. It will go into shock, and the heart will stop, and you die. So you put the body to sleep in sections. First, you say to the toes, okay, toes, drop off. Then you say to the knees, put your little caps on and go to sleep. Then you say to the thighs, okay, thighs, stop thighing. It's time to sleep. Then you say to the belly, see how the way I skipped because we're on radio? Then you say to the belly, stop your burbling and burbling, go to sleep. Then you say to the heart, you don't go all the way, you take a nap. Then you say to the brain, rock-a-bye brain in the head, you'll get another girl, there's many pebbles on the beach. you'll get another job. Come on, Brain, you're keeping down. Okay, everybody up. See, Brain, you woke up the whole body. Now, we used to do a lot of Meshuggah and stuff like that, but Sid understood it, and he did it beautifully. I loved working for Sid Caesar. I mean, I really loved that aspect of my life. It was wonderful. And we had wonderful, but I didn't perform. I'll tell you the only story. They asked me, I used to make a cat sound, and I made it very well, the sound of a pussycat. And Sid said, look, when I back up and I step on the cat's tail and Dial M for Money, we were doing a takeoff on Dial M for Murder, he said, would you, the sound man can't make that. Mel, please make the sound. So I said, okay. So just before I made the sound, Carl Reiner comes up to me and says, 100,000,000 people are going to hear you make the cat sound. So I said, wait, what? And then he walked away, and I was white as a ghost and terribly frightened. Sid backs up. He's supposed to he steps on the cat's tail, and I go, nothing. Nothing. Sid looks at me, walks away, and walks back toward the cat. Give me a second chance. I'm very nervous, and my mouth is full of cotton. This is my last chance. Sid steps with all his might, a big step on the cat's tail, and I go, and that was, I was said, okay. I mean, I got raves from everybody. People wrote in, who made the cat sound, they wrote. So that was the beginning of my professional television performing. Anyway, every Saturday night, Carl would walk up to me and say something like, with a tape recorder, he would say, sir, I understand that you were actually at the scene of the crucifixion. Now, this was all made up. There was, you know, it was all ad-lib. There was no material. So I would quickly dive into my Jew thing. You know, I'd say, yes. You know how much I love rice pudding. I think everybody in the neighborhood knows how much I adore rice pudding. When there was the crucifixion, I could not eat rice pudding that night. That's how upset I was. Did you know Jesus? Thin, a beard, sandals, white toga, came in the store. Never bought anything. Asked for water, gave him a glass of water, never purchased anything, but was a nice boy, and I used to say to him, don't hit the rabbis on the steps. Are you crazy? You're going to make trouble here. None of us thought he would turn up so big. None of us. Because we would have backed him, frankly. We would have backed him. But every Saturday night, we'd have a party, usually at Danny's Hideaway or something, and Carl Reiner would start. Now, Steve Allen was at one of those parties and said, this should be on records. I said, what are they? He said, they're very round. So we made one for a company called World Pacific. And Bob Crane, who was then a DJ on the coast, and a couple of other people, loved the record and it became a hit. So, bang, we did the 2,000-Year-Old Man on record. And then we did little TV shows to back it up. You know, we did the Sullivan shows. But it wasn't good, because when we did the Sullivan show, God bless Ed Sullivan, he was wonderful. He never, if you stuck out your hand, he never took it. He never saw it and he never shook your hand. You were had egg on your hand. If you didn't stick out your hand, he'd pull your hand out of your pocket. There was no way to shake Ed Sullivan's hand. I said, Carl, we can't do the Ed Sullivan show. Unless somebody says, now, and we both shake hands, you know? Because it was very embarrassing. Anyway, but the truth of it is that when we formalized the 2,000-Year-Old Man on television, we'd pick the best jokes and do them, and that's not good. Because the beauty, the wondrous aspect of the 2,000-Year-Old Man was that I never knew what Carl was going to ask me. And it was that fumbling and that nervousness. Did you know Joan of Arc? I went for that dummy. I went for, you know, these were all winners because I never knew what was going to be rolling my way. And the minute we formalized it and made it an act, it was, so we just stopped. I mean, we both agreed that it was commercial and not what we wanted to do, you know.
But you did make three records.
Yeah, we made three records, but they were all ad-lib and then edited later, so that if we did an hour, there was, you know, 40 good minutes, you know what I mean? But I never knew what the questions were, and that's what gave me the impetus to be insane. And I knew if I cursed or if I said anything unseemly, that we'd just cut it out later, you know.
There's a classic bit when you seemingly went the other way, and instead of being 2,000 years old, you were just 2 hours old.
Oh, that was nuts. That was nuts. Do you have that record here?
As if by magic.
Why don't you play it?
The birth of the Dion quintuplets has a maternity ward offered us the phenomena that this maternity ward at UCLA Medical Center offers us today. Not 2 hours ago, a little baby was born that has the power of speech and intelligence. The doctors are not able to tell us how or why. We have our cameras set up here, our tape recorders, and we're going to record the voice and intelligence of this two-hour-old baby. He's lying in his crib. We're going to put a little microphone in there now. We're going to try to contact him. I don't know if he will talk to us, but the nurses tell me he has been talking for the many hours he's been here. 2 hours, exactly. We're going to try. I'd like you to know the microphone is right by his head now. Little baby. Pardon me, little baby. Little baby. May we speak with you, little baby?
Hi, are you my dad? I haven't met my dad yet.
No. Amazing. Just a minute. He does speak here, fortunately, ladies and gentlemen. He's talking. No, I'm not your dad. You haven't met your mother yet.
No, I haven't met mom, but
You've been.
I know mom, sure.
Yes.
I've been around her.
But you haven't seen her?
No, I haven't seen the outside. No.
I see. Do you hope that she is good-looking?
Oh, no, I don't care what she looks like. I'm not going to date her. I'm her child.
I see. Because it doesn't matter what she looks like, it's what's inside of her.
Oh, I know she's good.
You do know?
I know she's good, because you can tell a person by what they are inside.
That's right.
Yes. And I was there. I was inside. I looked around. She's great.
I see.
Great woman. Wonderful person. Yes.
By the way, you don't have a name yet. It says just Baby Brooks on there.
Yes, it says it's on these little pink feet. Hey, I'm a girl. Hey! What the hell? I'm a little girl.
Well, I don't...
That's adorable.
Just a moment.
I think it's adorable. I'm a girl.
Just a moment. I think you don't... Do you see well yet?
No, it's kind of a blur, but
well,
it is pink.
No, they're blue.
Oh.
You're a boy.
Oh, well, that's all right. I'll play ball and get drunk and things. I'll be fine.
You don't mind being a boy.
No. Is Bert Lancaster... What is he?
He's a boy.
Oh, that's good. I'll be like him.
Baby, it is most incredible that you're able to speak.
Yes,
do you
it's
have any idea?
Listening.
Any
yeah.
idea
it's
why?
It's kind of frightening. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. It's kind of kicky, isn't it?
Yes. But how did you? Why were you given this gift? Well, how did it happen?
Well, it's very strange. I'm not sure myself. One of the doctors says it's like a tooth or
a prenatal tooth.
Yeah, that falls out when
the
you're
first
born, you
hour
know?
Of birth.
That's right.
Or prenatal hair on the
show. Exactly that.
Ah.
And this is a phenomenon of intelligence.
You may lose this intelligence.
I may, as you're talking to me, or a week later, but it'll fall out just like a tooth or extra hair.
Yes, well,
sure.
We better find out things about you right now while
go
we
ahead.
Can. There has been a lot written about prenatal memory before birth.
Yes.
Do you have any?
Oh, I remember when I was on a little tadpole, a little fetus there, swimming around.
Do you remember having a tail?
Sure. Oh, that was the best part.
You liked your tail?
Oh, I loved the tail.
Were you unhappy when it disappeared?
When I lost my tail, I got a nose.
You lose your tail?
And the nose is much more important because you can't blow your tail. You know what I mean?
If you get a cold, that's right.
That's right. Catch a cold, you can't blow your
Could you hear the outside world? Could you hear your mother talking?
Yes.
It wasn't clear, I imagine.
No, it was very fuzzy.
You were enveloped in water.
Sure, in the water and everything. But I remember the man, probably my father,
yes.
You know, saying, well already, when already. You know, something like that.
Well, may I translate for that for you? He was probably saying, when already? Because
when already,
he was anxious
yes.
for you to be born.
Yeah, sure. That's probably it.
You called. Now, what is it that makes a mother queasy or a little nauseous in the first 2 or 3 months of her pregnancy?
Well, I don't think it's physical, no.
It's not physical?
No, I think it's psychological.
Well,
I think the moment they realize that there's a living creature in them, they puke.
But why?
They're kind of scared.
But why?
Well, wouldn't you be nauseous if somebody was running around inside you? I mean,
well,
it's kind of frightening. You know
never
I mean?
Thought of that. Never
sure.
thought of that.
It's a frightening thing.
Do you know what's going on in the outside world? Do you know the celebrities of the day? Do you know the important people in the world today?
Some. I don't know. I'm not sure.
You don't know what you know?
No.
Do you know, for instance, Mickey Mantle?
No.
Queen Elizabeth?
No.
Winston Churchill?
No.
Fidel Castro?
No.
Pandit Nehru?
No.
Have you heard of Cary Grant?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
You heard of...
Well, everybody knows Cary Grant.
Well, how did you know him and nobody else?
Well, because my mother used to take me to a lot of Cary Grant pictures when I was inside her. See?
And you could...
It was muffled, but I kind of heard... You know, that was
Cary
Grant.
Right.
Sure.
I see.
She never took me to Pandit Nehru movie, so I don't know what it's like.
I see. Now,
I'm sure he's a hell of an actor.
Now, when you grow up, do you have any ambitions yet? What do you want to be when you grow up?
Well, I'd like to put on a little weight.
Oh, you will.
You will. I don't see how I could, drive a bus or anything. I'm only about 7 pounds.
14, yes.
Sure.
But what else would you like?
On the wheel.
I'd like to know what you feel about your father.
I feel that dad is the kind of guy that will gaga sound.
With what? With what? I didn't get that.
I feel that my father will always be the kind of guy that will take me to ball games and we'll be buddies and we'll sound
Nifoy.
Will you sign Nifoy? I don't understand you. What do you sign Nifoy? What does that mean?
I think that my father and I will probably get along well together, since we're both boys. We'll probably run around and play ball and yes.
I do believe, ladies and gentlemen, he's losing his intelligence. Are you losing your power of speech? You still have your... Well, you're not making sense now. I don't understand you. Can you pull yourself together?
Sure.
Hold yourself together.
Yes, I'll hold it together.
What do you think we should to make the world a better place to live in?
Birds.
What?
For my height.
What? Do what?
Joy, God,
You're losing. I don't understand.
What?
Oh.
Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks and the two-month-old baby here at WNAW-FM. This is Dennis Elsas with Mel Brooks at WNAW-FM. But before you have to leave, my memory is not clear on the date, but there was a short, which was probably the first thing that was on film for you, The Critic?
Yes.
62
or 3.
And it won the one of two Academy Awards that you won, correct?
Yes, it was the first Academy Award that I won. You can check up on me by going to Miami Beach and looking at my mother's credenza. You'll see my awards. Ernie Pintoff, a wonderful cartoonist, he did The Violinist with Carl Reiner, another beauty. I liked his work, and I came to him with this insane idea of an elderly Jewish person who would walk into a kind of avant-garde, abstract, color and light cartoon and try to make sense of it. And then when he saw the images, he would say, oh, it's a cockroach, it's a ping pong ball, it's a naked pigeon, it's a boiny, it's a bally, it's a pilly, you know, whatever. So I just ad-libbed for about 4 minutes, and he drew it all, knowing that this person would never understand it. And then I just ad-libbed and it worked on people. You know what's so thrilling to me, Dennis Elsas, WNEW-FM 102.7 on your dial? Do you know what's always thrilling and amazing to me? That people get it. I always think it's very private. I mean, people are either amazingly bright or they're as stupid as I am. But they get that. That's thrilling every time. You know, when they understand a joke, that, you know, like in High Anxiety, there are such rare references, like it's all Hitchcockian. It's all about the world of Alfred Hitchcock. And when I'm checking in at the desk with Ron Carey at the Hyatt Regency and other, I say, the guy behind the desk, Jack Riley, by the way, the actor, he's wonderful. He says to me, well, we had you on a lower floor, sir, but a Mr. MacGuffin called. And sometimes the audience goes crazy. How do they know that... That MacGuffin is a special Hitchcock term, meaning the plot device and the gimmick. And it's amazing, you know. But, I mean, that's the most rare instance of an audience getting things. I just did that for me. I never expected any, you know, little titillation whatsoever. So it's amazing when just plain folks understand what I am laying out.
What comes next? I mean, you said you'll be going overseas to promote the opening of the film and...
I'm thinking about the next movie, but it's not important. It's not, you know, I'm just waiting for the right thoughts to kind of coalesce and make sense to me. And then I will gather together a friend, a writer or two, and then maybe sit down and write for a couple of months to see whether the script is worth filming.
Would you go, your experiences in television, the creator of Get Smart, and also when
there's a little green thing just on your left nostril. You got it. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
When things were... Yeah. And then the Robin Hood spinoff a few years ago,
yeah.
When things were rotten. Would you go back to do more TV?
I did that because I loved Norman Steinberg, who helped me with Blazing Saddles, and he was one of the creators of it. So that was kind of a favor. And I will every once in a while, I'll do a crazy thing, a favor. I created Get Smart together with Buck Henry.
Right.
I'm not unashamed. I'm not... That's not a bad show. Don Adams, that was good. So, I mean, I don't put TV down per se. It's one of the major stops that I'm going to make on my way out of show business will be TV. I will do a couple of specials. You know how they do. I may end up... I'll be another Steve Allen, a short Jewish Steve Allen. I'll be at the piano. I'll sing a little bit. I'll tell about my life.
Before you leave, I've just got to do some more commercials. Can you hang out for me?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Get the bread. available at J&R Music World for $5.49. Repeat, $5.49. Triple, $5.49. Where are you going to get it? Where are you going to get it? Go to J&R Music World for $5.49. It's normally $7.98 for people of Gentile persuasion.
I thank you. Just thank you for...
Dennis, I want to thank you for being a nice guy. You know, you're one of the few DJs that doesn't blow his nose over the records and doesn't, you know, spit a lot. And it's wonderful because, I mean, they really, I mean, it's like sometimes you do a show with DJs and there's Kleenex all over the floor. You know what I mean? This is very neat, very nice. I mean, they usually, you know, they should have a half moon on the door outside. But you're very neat. You're compulsively neat.
Absolutely.
Do you go to special bars on the East Side and order creme de menthe? You can tell me, Dennis. I won't say tell us so. But tell me, sir. Why are you so neat?
Comes with the territory. I don't know.
You're clean shaven?
Yeah. For today?
Yeah, you really look good.
Just a little, nice shirt.
Is that mascara? Just a little touch. A little touch. Just. But no, seriously. I'm instead of waxing comedically, as is my wont, I want to say from the bottom of my left ventricle, boom. What I want to say to you, really, Dennis, sincerely, is that this has been good. This has been fun. And I thank you for saying nice things about me and High Anxiety and the album. And it's been a pleasure. And I don't know how to thank you. I hope the $300 I'm leaving under the record will in some way show a little of the kindness I feel for the plug. Oh, trouble. No, that was a lie. That was a lie. There's lying going on here, folks. Je suis un menteur. Menteur, that's French for liar. Did you know that I speak almost perfect French? J'ai besoin de l'addition. That means I have need of the check. J'ai besoin de l'addition. You could say, je veux le check also.
Uh-huh.
If you're crude, you could say, je veux le check. They know what the check is. They say, le drugstore. But I like to say, j'ai besoin de l'addition. That is my way of of saying thank you very much, Elsess. And say hello to your mom at Bloomingdale's, even as I will say hello to my mother in Miami Beach, Florida.
Well, as you say at the end of High Anxiety, be good to your parents.
Yes, and don't forget your folks, because they'll never forget you. I'm married to Anne Bancroft. She's in the turning point. Why not plug her picture too, right? I hope she wins. Okay, take care, Dennis. Pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Mel.
High Anxiety. Anxiety, whenever you're near, high anxiety, it's you that I fear. My heart's afraid to fly, it's crashed before, but then you take my hand. My heart starts to soar once more. High anxiety, it's always the same.
Mm-hmm. 102.7, this is WNEW-FM.